Greetings, comedy film nerd citizens. Welcome to episode 316. My name, Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. We've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to be talking about Everybody Wants Some, Miles Ahead, and some cool DVD and Blu-rays, and some interesting movies coming out this weekend.
We're also going to be talking about The Doc Generation Iron.
Yes.
Pump it. We want you guys. So we're going to pause right now and take a protein shake. God knows I had mine this morning. This is our weekly movie review show where Chris and I bring in usually a comedy friend of ours, sometimes somebody who works in the film industry, and we talk about movies.
Some announcements.
Couple of announcements. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a big Earbuds announcement.
Yes,
soon.
Very soon. This is the tease. We will be premiering at a film festival, and we will be telling you which one very, very shortly.
Very shortly. Yeah, we like teases.
Yeah, so everything's on track now. We're great. The movie, like we said, it's done. We're going through the festival circuit. We're just starting that, and then distribution, and then rewards. So you guys will be getting your rewards in a couple months for sure.
For sure. For sure. I'd like to say fall, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It will coincide remarkably, most likely, with the next festival. Probably about that same time.
We could have some shit for sale at PodFest. That would be golden.
Which is interesting because it's not like we planned it that way. It just looks like it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right?
But yeah, I guess we could announce a couple more shows that we have confirmed for Los Angeles Podcast Festival.
Yes.
Your Mom's House with Christina Pazinski and her husband Tom Segura is in. Who else did we get? We got some other fun, delicious shows. Todd Glass, Never Not Funny. Of course, Welcome to Night Vale.
Yes. And we're still working on confirming some other big ones.
Right. So check. Go to lapodfest.com. The early bird tickets and the kind of early bird tickets are already sold out, guys. The tickets.
So we only have regular birds left.
Only regular birds. So we have, you know, the tickets sold out last year. It's been, a lot of stuff.
And we will be doing the pay-per-view again this year, too, if you can't come and see it live.
Right. Did Allison Rosen confirm?
Allison Rosen confirmed, yes.
Allison Rosen confirmed. Oh, mm-hmm. Snap. Paul Gilmartin's Mental Illness Happy Hour is doing it. Steel Wars is going to be in the festival. So, you know, we're going to keep adding people. Get your hotel rooms and get your weekend passes. We've already started selling some Saturday passes. We haven't even announced.
I know. I think that's amazing. I don't think that's ever happened before either.
This is the earliest a day pass has ever gone out.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I don't care. Saturday, I'm there. Doesn't matter who's there.
I know it's going to be packed all
day. It will. It will. And it will. And they want the stand-up show.
Yeah. What other announcements do we have, Chris? Anything
exciting? Those were the main ones. No, we have... we're working on everything else, like you said, the festival and the film, and you know, I know we have a new Dana Gould T-shirt.
Ooh.
Yes, this is
didn't.
Yeah,
is that what his shirt says? Is it Dana Gould talk to the hand?
Yeah. Dana Gould's rolling his eyes right now. He didn't even hear that. He just like somebody said something dumb about my shirt.
He was walking down the street and went, oh God. Like he just got a weird, creepy feeling in his hand.
So it's a really cool design by Ben Walker. This is he's an opera singer. And
that's awesome.
And they were pre-ordered. Dana accidentally announced it too early and then immediately got emails. It's not up at Comedy Film Nerds yet.
Oh, thanks, Dana.
So I got an email from Jeff going, Dana announced it, but we don't have them yet. Now we do. As of today, they are ready for sale and they're in stock.
Dana Gould. You can buy a whole myriad of Dana Gould products.
We can. Now there's three different designs now for T-shirts for Dana.
Outstanding. There's a whole bunch of Doug Benson CDs.
There are.
Everything you could want. T.J. Miller has stuff on this site.
We do, and we have some great signed headshots.
From T.J. Miller. Yeah. That if you buy any of his thing, it's an old
we'll throw
headshot.
Him in. Yeah. And he makes fun of his face in every single...
That's all he does. It's
signature, yeah.
If you buy a T.J. Miller thing, there's a photo of him making fun of himself.
Right. We'll send it.
It's good business. Introduce the guest.
Yes.
Come on.
We are very happy to have this guest back. He hasn't been on in a little bit, but he's also a writer for Comedy Film Nerds and had his own podcast, Professor Blastoff, but that is no longer. However, he's continued with his new podcast called Space Cave. Ladies and gentlemen, David Huntsberger.
Well, what a succinct intro. Thank you.
We want to be the most succinct podcast, if nothing else.
You really nailed it.
Yeah.
Succinct. You get it here.
Yeah.
Hashtag succinct.
Yeah.
Good luck spelling it.
Yeah.
Give us what happened with Professor Blastoff.
Well,
which is a great podcast.
Thank you. Yeah. I guess there are a handful of them that are out there now that, like Walking the Room, that are no longer around,
right.
Where in music it took bands like 20 years to be like, hey, we're breaking up, and then they'd have these reunion tours or something like that. We don't have any plans to do that, and I don't see it happening. And that wasn't... it wasn't like... I would imagine those bands just get sick of each other. It wasn't really that with us. It was just... Everyone got a little... Mostly Tig got too busy to where she felt like she couldn't give the right amount of attention to the show.
Sure.
And then we kind of toyed around with the idea of keeping it going in a different capacity. And then, like a band, it just felt like, it's a three-piece. So rather than just Kyle and I continuing or trying to like bring in someone new, we just sort of put it to rest. And then I like podcasting, and I had done so much. This feels like a press conference or something.
Explain yourself, sir.
Well, thank you all
like
for being
mesmerized
here.
Mesmerized by this story.
Wow.
I'm like, shh, let him finish.
Well, honestly, I got to be honest. It's a succinct.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was being very succinct.
Yeah.
and so I just kept, you know, the day-to-day, I don't know, whatever the work element that goes into doing a podcast.
Sure.
When you're in the habit of doing that, I think the worst thing you can do is just like stop and then be like, in a year or two, I'll get it back together.
Right.
Because when you start to think about it, you're like, that was a lot of stuff. It's a lot that goes into like booking and scheduling and organizing. Mm-hmm. So just keeping it going, I just started this new thing that I've really enjoyed doing, and doing it very low key. Like there's no network. It's just me. But I really like it. I just, the conversation, and that's, what I really enjoyed about podcasting in the beginning, you know, like the network angle, the more popular they become, it becomes a little bit like television. You got to have like a hook and things like that. And I liked it more where it's just free form, like, oh, here are conversations that I like having. So I have some beers with people and chat about, you know, I've had like people that are, you know, I have like PhDs that went to Yale and things like that. I mean,
is it really a science leaning podcast?
Yeah, for the, I mean, it's what you would like. So my part in Professor Blastoff was very like, keep it on track. I love science. I mean, I want to know just about the world at large. Mm-hmm. And, you know, science is probably the best language we have to explain that.
But can't the Bible tell you that?
You bring up a great point. And as this cross here I'm wearing will show you, I do want to talk to like theology people and I've had, you know, just artists on, musicians and people like that, because I think they have usually like a weird association.
Different perspective.
Yeah, totally. Mm. So there's really no like, oh, I couldn't have you on. I can only have physicists or something. It's not like that. I prefer when people have some area of fascination, you know?
Like, oh, right.
So like on Blastoff when you talked about like samurai stuff and things like that, mm-hmm. like those to me are conversations that I still really enjoy.
Yeah. I just did a little call in for the episode right now.
Oh yeah. We're still going to get you on to talk about like movies and stuff, which
absolutely,
we never got to do with Blastoff, but, but yeah. So I do a call in thing at the beginning, and Chris was the one this time, but usually what it is I just tweet like, who wants to chat, and someone will tweet me their number. And so I'll call a complete stranger, which I really like.
That's awesome.
Cool.
It's fun. Yeah. Cause like sometimes people just want to rail against like politics. Other times they're just kind of like, hey, what's going on? But sometimes like there was this girl on one of the first episodes that was like, I'm walking to meet someone who used to be my friend who I caught making out with my boyfriend at the time at a party. And we're going to like reconcile.
Wow.
And that was pretty fascinating to me. She didn't think it was that big of a deal, but I was like, everyone on earth has their little A story.
Right.
And so to be a part of this podcast kind of little B story, they all interweave in a cool way that I want to check back in like months or years later and see like, whatever happened with that. And so that part's been pretty cool. So
cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Space Cave.
And
how often do you do it? Once a week?
Once a week. Comes out every Monday, thespacecave.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I like it. If you like the sound of this voice you're hearing, that's the place to get more.
So, all right, let's talk about some movies. All right, buddy. I want to talk about Everybody Wants Some. The reason I saw this movie, too, wasn't my first choice. Jungle Book, the family wants to go see it, so we're going to see it this coming weekend. And Green Room was not playing anywhere near me. Now, right. I will say that there's been a lot of like good buzz about both Jungle Book and Green Room. And Neil said the same thing. He had the same reaction as I did to the trailer. I'm like, well, it looks okay. It could be bad. But then we found out it was the director of like Blue Ruin. He's like, oh, this, I'm in. I can't wait to
see it. Well, now I have to see Blue Ruin. Like, everyone,
yeah, exactly.
People have been
I want to see
about
that
Blue
one
Ruin
too.
Online.
Now.
If they build it up too much, I don't think it'll live up to your expectations.
You definitely have to temper it down, possibly.
I feel like they really wanted Zach Galifianakis to play that guy because the guy wasn't dynamic to me. The story is interesting, but he, to me, didn't. I hate to like talk negatively, but I thought he did well, but I couldn't help but think because he looks kind of like Zach.
You're talking about Blue Ruin?
Blue Ruin, yeah, the main guy. In the beginning, he has like the same color hair, a beard, and he's kind of, he's just like kind of shiftless.
Like it went down in the breakdown, Zach Galifianakis type.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked it though. I thought the movie was good and it has an interesting kind of, it's saying something.
So, and I will say this too. I get really excited. I am so happy when this happens, when like it's a mediocre trailer and then the movie ends up being really good.
Right.
Because so often the opposite happens. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is like a discovery. So I'm excited to see both of these movies now.
Yeah.
Okay. After I was not sold on either trailer at all. So.
All right.
I wonder if more people are going to start or if people are purposely doing that where it's just like Arial font, a couple of shots that make no sense, they're not congruent, and then just the title of the movie. Because when you go see a movie like that where you have no idea, like, what was that? And it surprises you, it's way better. And everyone's always complaining about, like, I just saw the whole movie.
Yeah,
you saw every good part in the
trailer.
I
completely agree.
And I think what happens, too, is if I see the whole movie, there's got to be statistics to show, oh, you ruined sales. You hurt sales by making this long and dumb of a trailer where people just went, versus what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Let me see it.
I got to see what that is, you know? So, all right.
So, and I went to see Everybody Wants Some. And this is the Richard Linklater movie. I will say I'm a huge fan of Richard Linklater. I absolutely loved Boyhood. And a lot of people, it definitely was mixed. Like some people loved it. Some people didn't really like it as much. But
what if we try a trailer guess from, did you see the trailer?
Yeah.
What do you think the movie is? What I didn't like about the trailer in this, sorry to jump in, but I think this is interesting that we were just talking about trailers. In that movie, or in the trailer, they show this guy who's like pretty good looking. Mm-hmm. He goes to school and he's supposed to be kind of an outcast.
Right.
Then in the trailer, they show like the girls like him. He has no problems, no trouble with anything. Mm-hmm. There doesn't seem to be that weird kind of, there are no stakes for him. Like everything's working out.
What's interesting is that trailer was very representative of the film. Where it was really, it just kind of meandered. It didn't go anywhere. And it's interesting, if you break down Richard Linklater's movies, you could really say, well, they're talky. Not a lot happens, and you could say that about all the movies. So what makes one of them excel, whereas another one it falls flat? It's like that magic of filmmaking that you can't really, you know, identify or codify scientifically. Like, you know, these are the same exact beats you're doing in every single movie. It's like you're trying to have breakout new cast members. It's talky, it's period, it's coming of age, all those things. But now why does it work here and why does it not work here? Because this is,
and it was billed as a follow-up to Dazed and Confused a little bit, right?
It was weird where it was kind of the same old, but it was also like Boyhood, where Boyhood kind of ended with the kid going to college and this starts with the kid to college. Like it's the whole movie takes place the first couple of days before classes. Mm-hmm. He gets into his baseball house because it's a baseball team, and he meets the other guys there, and then they have their quote adventures.
it
they drink.
To me, like,
and,
the poor version of Summer Catch, which is saying a lot.
Yeah,
Summer Catch.
Yeah. Well, I will say there's
with Matthew Lillard, the boy. Wow.
There is very little baseball in this movie. It's more them talking to each other. But
that's a Freddie Prinze Jr. movie.
Wow.
Better believe it is.
Nice.
Young Jessica Biel, Fred Ward is in it.
It was a hot young cast.
Way to pull that one out.
Well, it's about a rich girl whose family, Summers on Cape Cod, has a romance with a local poor boy who hopes to become a Major League Baseball player.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's just all the right moves, but for baseball.
Totally. Yes.
Love it.
Wow. Written by a marketing computer.
That's so great. So, oh, I miss Freddie Prinze Jr. he would crank a couple out a year.
I'm sure there's a Scooby-Doo one in
development. Scooby-Doo was a departure. Because the one that you're talking about where he was always just this charming guy in a situation where you're like, who would care about this? Oh, evidently lots of people.
Yeah.
Enough that he's going to make these every year. And then he didn't he like,
until
just
they grew
quit
up.
Show business?
Well, yeah, his audience grew up.
Yeah, and he was like,
he was like, okay, I can't still keep making these movies. No,
I hear you can't. His heart. Maybe he's. Like,
I think he actually like, from what I've understood, and who knows what actually happened, but I heard he kind of just went, "Nah, I got plenty of money.
I'm done."
Yeah. What if he does like a Jackie Earl Haley rebirth?
I would love to see that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, like 2025, really cool. He's going to come back as this cagey old, you know, private
like Bruce Dern.
Yeah. He's gonna
just balding and just
he's gonna do like a
Freddie
taxi
Prince.
Driver
yeah,
kind
Freddie
of thing.
Prince yeah. Jr. That's right. Give him a little Princey.
Give him a little Princey.
Little Princey Jr. You want a little taste of that now?
It's me, Princey J. I'm 50. I'm back and I'm 50.
Yeah. I need a role now as a cab driver.
Yeah, just a gritty.
Get me back in it.
Good luck, kid. They'll always fuck you in the end, you know?
Just, you know, when I was a kid, this guy used to make some pretty boy movies, but I'll tell you.
No, really, Dad? Yeah, he was.
Yeah,
he was pretty boy.
He was popular. Yeah.
He was a baseball guy. Scooby-Doo. The whole shot.
Baseball guy.
He's married to Buffy.
Prom guy.
Bunch of prom guys. Bunch of prom guys. Bunch of kids from the wrong side of tracks.
Yeah.
So anyway, everybody wants some.
I will say the other thing, too, about every Richard Linklater movie, there is no reason at all to see this, any of his films on a big screen. You know, they're all small, quiet moments. It's a lot of people talking, and it's actually made more for watching at home, I think, his movies, like more intimate kind of thing. So
I wonder if Waking Life would have been a good theater experience.
Well, that was pretty crazy.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting, just because the story, I mean,
I bet if you went to like a theater that didn't have a lot of people in it, that everyone was real quiet, that'd be real fun.
That'd be probably
a
different experience.
Fun animation.
Yeah.
So that's a good point, actually, because cool animation actually is kind of a treat on the big screen, because I think as kids we're sort of used to animation being on the small screen, and that's sort of how you watch it. And even today, a kid's animated kids movie, you might take them to the theater, but you might just wait till it's on DVD or VOD and show your kids that way. So And then a sort of an adult-themed animation movie is really... I think that's a good call. I think Waking Life might be pretty good on a big screen.
Because it is so slow.
I remember seeing it, at home, too. I didn't see it on a big screen. So I'll bet it would look interesting on a big screen. So now this movie, the one thing that I was trying to pinpoint it, like I said, it's very difficult to pinpoint where this movie went wrong. and it fell flat. And I think one of the things was a lot of his movies, even though they're quiet and they show you those quiet moments in life that actually have more poignancy, there is some philosophy, there's insight in all those things. This movie had very little of that. It was just a bunch of like, all right, now they're going to be drinking, now they're going to a different bar, now they're trying to get laid, and now they're playing on the baseball team. It didn't have the insight or depth that his other movies had. Like, a lot of times they're deceptive. Like, you watch some of his other movies, even like Dazed and Confused. There's more stuff going on there than all right.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
And
just gotta keep
and,
on,
and this one, I felt like he was just kind of like walking, well, I'm just going to make an 80s version of, you know, my other movies. like it really felt like there's not as much went into this as the other films. Like, just the, you know, the dialogue, you know, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, you know, there was a lot of time and effort that went into, because it was literally two people talking for 90 minutes. This felt like we're just going to go kind of from sketch to sketch. We're going to make fun of each of these guys in a different way. Like, you know, there's like the Hayseed guy, player that they make fun of. And,
also in Summer Catch.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's from...
You know far too much about Summer Catch. I got to be honest with you.
If I'm being honest, I can watch movies like that all day. Right. Like, there's just a perfect, like, I just want something. Everyone has that.
Right.
But yeah. I think it's great.
Great soundtrack. The one thing that was interesting, too, is that this went, like, it was, like, early 80s, so it was kind of the transition from 70s to 80s, so you still had a disco, but then you also had a punk club, and they would go to each, and I'm like, okay, well, they're just kind of touring different clubs and getting drunk. This is, you know.
Do you think, though, Chris, that this was Richard Linklater going, I want to just do a straight comedy?
No, because it was still, you still had those kind of like dramatic moments. Oh. There was some laugh out loud funny moments, but also there was some drama, but it lacked that depth that comes with his other films. And I was reading some trivia, and it said he left the incredible Mr. Limpet remake to make this film. And even though I didn't like this film, I'm still thinking that may not have been a bad idea.
Yeah, because who's Don Knotts?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that who's Mr.
Yeah.
I mean, who on earth
turns into the fish?
Maybe Steve Buscemi. That could be the only guy I think that would have the charm potentially.
And the weird voice.
Who can play
that guy?
Yeah, no one. I don't think anyone can be like this dude who loves fish.
The words incredible like Mr. Limpet remake never should be said.
It's like a Christopher Walken type. Like there's no such thing. There's Don Knotts.
There's Don Knotts and there's Christopher Walken, and there aren't carbon copies of them.
and you also think like what executive is going, we're making an incredible Mr. Limpet remake. Get me Richard Linklater.
Top of the list.
Yeah.
Get Dickie Lynch on the phone.
I appreciate that they didn't do it with Tim Burton, though, because that would, I think, be the top of the list, and then everyone would
You know who was probably at the top of the list that said no immediately? Brad Bird.
Yeah. Because
he would actually, I'd actually like to see what he would do with it, but he's like, I'm too busy. Come on.
I'd love to be just in the waiting room of the audition for a bunch of Don Knotts types.
Hi, is this Vaughn or Bird?
Oh God!
And then you know the theme of Mr. Limpet was at the end we're going to weaponize fish.
Yeah,
yeah, So let me see if I got this right. You know a lot about Summer Catch, and you can do a really good Don Knotts. I'm just trying to see if we got Hutzberger dialed in yet. Every time we learn something new about you, buddy.
There are many pieces to the puzzle.
So I think this movie, in conclusion, even fans of Linklater would be hard-pressed to really say it was amazing. It's definitely, it misses the mark. There's some good moments in it, but it's by far not his best work.
But it is the thing, though, like, he's one of those directors. If you're a fan of his movies, you'll go see it.
You'll find something to like in there for sure, but it's...
It looked too bright.
It's his Hateful Eight.
It's his Hateful Eight? All right, that makes sense.
Yeah,
so, real quick, though, David, what would Don Knotts be like in Summer Catch?
Turn two, fellas! Real hard, fellas! That was a wicked slider! Yeah, I had me on the 0-2 pitch there. And I went down swinging, right, boys?
Hashtag Don Knotts.
Oh, my gosh.
Don Knotts, he's the coach. I love it. Or, like, he's the first base coach.
He's just a struggling right field guy that's always striking out. And then the end, when they need a hit in the final scene,
I really came through there.
Chips a bunt down the left field line.
Yeah, and, like, he trips, and that's how he's safe. He, like, bumbles into being safe while then the other guy runs home or something that. I did it!
Yeah. Just like I planned it.
When I woke up this morning, I didn't think I was going to hear a Don Knotts impression.
Me either.
Nor I.
Yeah.
But you bring up Summer Catch and Mr.
I thought Don Adams, maybe.
I was expecting a Don Adams. Today felt like a Don Adams day.
Yeah. It was like, but can you do Don Adams from Get Smart?
No. I don't even, the voice doesn't even come to my head.
I don't know.
Sorry about that, Chief. Yeah, see, I can't do it either.
That wasn't bad, though.
Is he who, like, Wiggum is based on?
No. He's. It was a very specific
I love affectation. Don Adams.
Yeah, it was great.
All right.
Sorry to let you down there, guys.
Yeah. Wow. The show just right, lost right a lot time. Of steam. Yeah. It's right time code. We're
right
cutting
down the
this
time
out.
Code. We'll cut it out.
The thing in the trailer for to really talk about who everybody wants something that I only saw the trailer for, it turned me off that Randall Pink Floyd is charming. There's something about his, like, I can't decide what I want to do. And
right.
Yeah, girls like him, and you're totally cool with that. Like, mm-hmm. He's skinny and he smokes pot, and why wouldn't they like him? But the guy in Summer Catch just, or not, Summer Catch 2, sorry. he seemed too, like everything seemed to be going for him. And the lighting is very bright. It looks very clean and crisp. There was no mood to it.
Mm-hmm. No, it's yes. Everything you're taking away from the trailer is how the movie was. So now, Graham, you saw Miles Ahead.
Yeah, I really like this movie for mm-hmm. a lot of reasons.
Documentary about Miles Teller?
Yes. Seems a little early, but it may, I don't know, which made sense. 7 years ago. It's a Miles Davis documentary that Don Cheadle helped write and he directed, and he obviously plays Miles Davis. I love this movie. I mean, I should, you know, full disclosure, I'm a giant Jazz and Miles Davis fan, so it was really cool for me to be like, oh, that's The Session with Kinda Blue. There's Gil Evans. Like, oh my God. Like, I was doing that a little bit. But first of all, Don Cheadle is a really good actor. He does a great Miles Davis, if you've ever seen any interviews. And the bulk of the movie, well, not the bulk of it, but I'd say probably 60, 70% is Miles Davis in the late 70s. But then he flashes back to various points in his life, like recording, you know, Kinda Blue or On the Road. But
they didn't do that weird thing they did with, like, the Beach Boy one where it played by different actors.
No, it was him. Well, because it was very easy. I mean, it's you're lucky in the sense that early Miles Davis just had short hair.
Right.
I was going to say, that's the Better Call Saul method. You got to age someone down, add more hair.
Right. Yeah, that's it. That's it. So then late Miles Davis is all long and kind of crazy hair mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So, one of the things I really liked about this movie, and it might be a cinematic choice that Don Cheadle made that might not, some people might not like it. I liked it in this because he does these kind of flashbacks and everything kind of molds in, because the movie starts out, so it's late 70s Miles Davis. He hasn't recorded an album in almost 5 years. He's become this sort of recluse. And Ian McGregor plays a Rolling Stone reporter who's like, you know, trying to get the story and kind of sneaks in and breaks into his place, kind of forces himself in, and he calls in a recorder. Oh my God, this is where the genius lair is, and it's all disheveled, and he's like, he's become the Howard Hughes of jazz, because that's sort of what was happening. And so there's this that storyline, the 1978 or 79 storyline, is there's this, he recorded these sessions and Columbia, his record label, is like, we need to release this album, and he won't, and they're trying to get him.
It was his Chinese Democracy. Guns N' Roses.
Yes, it is his Chinese Democracy. So then he's like, he's on drugs and he's going through, but then he has these crazy flashbacks. And a lot of it is really, he's flashing back to his relationship with Frances Taylor. And because he has, like, regret over that and stuff. And so, but it sort of molds one into another. And I liked it for two reasons. One, it isn't the sort of, we've talked about this before in the show, the paint by numbers biopic. You know, it's like, show him as a kid and he picks up a trumpet. Oh, wow, he's amazing. Yeah. And then you show mm-hmm. him as in the army or whatever. Like, you know, I mean, Miles Davis, but he like...
Getting yelled at by his music teacher.
Yeah, exactly. You stick to the notes, Miles, you know, like, I do what I want. This kid will never go anywhere, you know.
I'm solemn, like, putting the trumpet in the case and I just don't have the money or the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll never recognize this dream.
Hey, kid, want to make an album? Like, who are you? I'm Jim Coltrane. You can call me John. Whoa! Like, so they didn't do that thing. It takes place right before his rebirth, his where he gets into, I think that's one, maybe when he made Bitches Brew or whatever. But So I liked that it didn't just go paint by the numbers. And then it also, the thing I liked about it is it kind of goes in and out, and it's very, you know, he was one of the more amazing improvisational musicians that have ever lived. And Don Cheadle is kind of doing that. He's kind of going in and out. And so Miles Davis was a classically trained musician, and he was so good at, you know, traditional music. Was just a brilliant guy that he could, like, you can only break a convention if you're well versed in it,
right?
You can't just like, I'm gonna do what I want. You have to learn it and then say, let's break this and try something.
It's new. Like everyone now just jumps straight into alternative comedy their first open mic. They've never seen like the whole
traditional,
you know,
comedy.
If you're classically trained, that means like you study music theory, music history. You gotta get up to speed on like, here's everything that's happened.
Every note, you gotta do all your scales. You gotta train. I remember my father was a college professor, and one of his friends was a science professor, and he would tell his science grad students, he'd go, "You think you're working hard? Go watch the music grad students, what they have to do." Right. Mm-hmm. And so
if you want to be a sitcom writer, you'd be a better one if you watched Cheers and Seinfeld.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like if you know what comes before.
Mm-hmm. No, but that's a good point though. Going to the alternative comedy thing. I remember when that first started happening in the 90s and all these like young comics, like I'm gonna just look at my notepad. I was like, no, it was a bunch of comics like Patton Oswalt and everybody all went on the road and did shitty bar gigs and did late show Fridays in front of bachelorette parties and had an office party and all these, you know, some dipshit from the office thinking he's funny. Yeah. Went through all that crap. Got heckled for being too political in the middle of the country or whatever.
Right.
And then said, fuck, I want to try something else. I want to take traditional stand-up and do it differently. And you had to go on the road for years to be able to just do that.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. has done the road. Every traditional comic has gone and done 1,000 gigs. Mm-hmm. And so that's what was great in terms of Don Cheadle's directorial style is he really weaved in visually how Miles Davis would just traditional jazz and then would just like go in a completely different direction. And also I think he was trying to show like the head of Miles Davis in the late 70s. He's kind of going a little nuts. He's doubting himself. There's also drugs. He regrets like ruining marriages and shit like that. But is also, you know, the, hey, you're such a genius. He hates it because he, you know, he's like looking at his trumpet, like, fuck you, you know, he's like yelling at his trumpet.
So you get a real portrait, like
you get like you're inside this guy's apartment when he's fucking losing his shit for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And what you do if you're as an artist, like I've bounced off the walls in my apartment recently on the road and I start thinking about all this shit from the past and what should I have done with my career.
And Miles Davis.
Think about Miles Davis. I put him on Pandora and I hear little sketches of Spain and everything's all right. And then there's some funny shit in there. Don Cheadle's a funny guy.
Yeah.
So there's funny, and it's, I've also read a Miles Davis biography and he was a genius, but he could just be a fucking asshole. And also, when he got famous, he was like, yeah, I'm like Picasso style, like, I'm Miles Davis. Who the fuck are you?
So what's redeeming about him then if he's this crazy guy that breaks up marriages? It's like, fuck you, I'm Miles Davis. It's just that he's so good.
His music is so amazing.
That's to me, like, necessary in art. Everyone now, you work with, like, the shittiest people. And how are they? Nicest guy. It's hard to dislike them. You're like, they should never pick up a paintbrush. They should never pick up an instrument. They should not do stand-up. Hell of a nice guy or girl. And for someone to be so undeniably good, or like, it burned down my house, and I still want to go buy that record.
Right. And I think, but the other redeeming just from a personality, and this is also in this biography that I read, I believe it was written by Ian Carr. I'm not sure if I have that correct, but he was like, wanted the best out of you as a musician. If you played with him, he was like, give me it. And they'd be like, no. He's like, the fuck is that? Like, he would push you to be the best. Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard interviews with like Herbie Hancock and people like that who were like, I mean, he'd get up in your fucking grill, but then you would be better. And so to me, what I watch when I see this is I always, when I see these sort of the drug addict chaos stories, I always go, God, I don't know. Did heroin help create Bebop? Because all those guys did it, yeah. But then it also killed all of them. Charlie, all of them. They were all fucking Chet Baker. They were all fucking heroin addicts. And it's
heroin's
like...
Heroin's had this weird influence. Musically especially. You like dip back down through like, good God. Like it really is... Maybe there's something to it where it channels people into this conduit into a different dimension.
It's weird when
it makes them become awful assholes that die from it.
Yeah.
And it's also like, at what point does it become part of the culture? It's like, mm-hmm. well, you're a musician, you have to use heroin. Like that kind of weird, where that specific drug is tied to that one industry.
And I think what I would like to believe is that you don't need it. And mm-hmm. I would like when anytime I see these stories, I always go, well, how much more could he have done if he wasn't, you know, if this drug didn't get him down? But also, that's the brain of the artist is the most like you have such confidence when you've become a professional and you've established yourself. You have such like think of it as a comic. You, mm-hmm. sometimes you go on stage and you're just like, fuck yeah, mm-hmm. like what do you need? I'm slam dunking in your face, and then conversely, can just be like, this is awful. I'm the worst. Yeah. You know, like,
I don't belong here.
Everyone thinks I'm shitty. Yeah. Like, this is a scam. You know, if you haven't been successful, you're like, it's because I'm a jackass. If you do get success, you're like, I've been lying and tricking everybody. You know. And so
I just read to that point, like, I read On Writing by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And he's someone that to me seems like he'd always been like, I'm Stephen King and I just love writing. Which he has been, but in his 20s-ish, he had a horrible drinking problem that turned into a cocaine problem that turned into him, like, his whole family begging him, like, you gotta get clean. You got kids now, man. And after the fact, still getting back to writing and talking about it, being like, it is a bit of a misnomer that, like, great artists need that. Right. Like, maybe they're slightly more prone to like it, but it's not like the fuel. Like, Hemingway didn't get all drunk and then write. He wrote, and then he got all drunk.
Right.
So you can make a correlation between the two, but I lean more toward that nowadays, especially after hearing, like, Stephen King talk about it, that it's not fuel. It's not like, oh, I can't play a note. Let me shoot up some heroin and then I'll...
Right. It's more of a crutch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think like the comics were like, well, I don't want to go to therapy because then I'll lose my edge or whatever. Yeah. I think it's an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can be funny. I think you can be creative. I think you can have an edge. You know, I think you can be angry or whatever.
Yeah.
And without, you don't need that. Because that shit, I mean, there's pretty clear stats on what that does.
Yeah.
But it's a really good film. And then the woman, Emayatsi Corialdi, plays his wife, Frances. And you know, she's a really solid actor. She's in The Invitation. And she, you know, it's really cool. You kind of know the history of their marriage. And then, you know, she was loved him. Oh, my God, he's Miles Davis. But then... he's Miles Davis, so he's getting high and he's sleeping around and all this other shit. And so I really like it. I think it's hard for me to say, like, if you're not a jazz person or not, you know, whatever, I have no opinion either way on Miles Davis, would you like this movie? I want to say yes. I want to say because it is well done, it is interesting, it does show you what the sort of inner turmoil of an artist of that level is like.
Mm-hmm.
The doubts and the craziness. And then when all this money is thrown into it, and then there's this sort of idol worship that's thrown into it, how that can mess with you.
Mm-hmm.
And who do I trust? And, you know, everyone's got an angle and all this other stuff. And then I can't even get my own shit together. So I think it's a really good film, and I mean, I love the fact that Don Cheadle is directing films. Like, I'm trying to think if he's directed anything else.
I always think it's Cheadle.
Cheadle? Yeah, maybe it is Cheadle. I enjoy mispronouncing names. It's sort of a skill that I like doing. he's...
Don Cheadello?
John Cheadello. I mean, he's done a couple episodes of House of Lies. And
Wonder how we got that gig.
Yeah, the show he stars in. Yeah. That's weird. And he did a miniseries, but this is it. So, but it's worth seeing. I think it's limited release. So where can you find it? I don't know, but
is it the shots? Is it the editing? Is it?
It's all of that. It is. Really? He does really cool shots. He does really cool editing. There are cool shots because you can tell too. He. My guess is him and his DP went. Let's look at all those old black and white and those Blue Note album covers were fucking awesome. And the way they captured jazz with the cigarettes and the smoky crowds and the low lighting.
Nice, yeah.
So there's a lot of that. Like,
oh, cool.
And I really dig it. So, cool. So I think it's
great. It would just be weird if heroin was taken out of that equation. Not because it's not necessary, just because like when you have a package and especially when it's in the past, it has existed. It's hard to go like, oh, well, they could have done it without that. Like, but they didn't. Like, that's what it all is. It is the smoke. It is the low ceilings. It is that, like, low, sad, like, one note of a trumpet kind of singing out into an empty street. It's all that shit. Like, if you take away some of it, you're like,
footsteps of one person walking down a street.
Yeah, maybe one of those lighters flipping up in your clothes.
Yeah, man. So it is all that. And I think he captured that visually, and he captured that with... And then, of course, he's got the music. He's got the music in there, so that's
that's
awesome music. All right.
We have a sponsor this week.
We got SpareMen.com. SpareMen,
they are back. Now, who are we listening to today?
Oh, so we've got a really cool SpareMen with CJ Johnson, and he talks about two docs that are on HBO, one about Mike Nichols and one about Nora Ephron, that are really cool. So it's 5 minutes, SpareMen. And this is the cool thing about SpareMen is like, if you want to have conversations with people without giving out your phone number, you can do it. And then you could even record the conversations and post them for people to listen to.
Or you could keep them private. You have a choice.
You could do it for your podcast, David Huntsberger.
Yes. Okay. And limit the call to 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's a 5 minute
call. Especially if you're talking to a stranger.
No. You know what? Someone from a similar app, if not this person, contacted me and I said, I need it to get to 10. Like, 5 is just not enough. So whoever this is theoretically kind of working on that. Like, an option where you could go 5, 10, or 15.
Ooh.
Oh.
So that would be great.
All right.
That's the Space Cave variation.
Space Cave variation.
I got it tailored to my own needs.
Somebody got the Space Cave spare man.
Are you going with the stock version? Mine's classic.
But yeah, that's the cool thing about it. So it's an app. The app is free, and you can have really cool short time phone calls. You don't have to give out your phone number. There's no scheduling. Whoever wants to talk to you, you can share them publicly or not. So just go to SpareMen.com or look for SpareMen in the Apple app or Google Play store. So here is CJ Johnson talking about two cool HBO docs.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Graham Millwood, it's CJ Johnson. I've got a SpareMen for you.
Hey, CJ Johnson. All right, man. What do you want to talk about on your spare men?
Oh, man. Well, I'm in LA at the moment, and one of the things I love when I come over to the United States is documentaries on HBO. And there's a couple of documentaries on HBO at the moment about two of the funniest filmmakers ever. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to draw your attention to them because they're both excellent, excellent, excellent. One of them is called Becoming Mike Nichols, and it is a feature-length interview, essentially, with Mike Nichols. And it was the last interview he gave before he died. You know, he died only a few months ago.
Right.
And this interview was done at a theater in New York in front of an audience just, I think, a couple of weeks before he died. And what he decided to do, the interview is with an old friend of his, which is really nice because it's very, very personal and very, very intimate. These are guys who go way back. And what they decided beforehand is they decided rather than talk about all of Mike Nichols' entire career, which was just so many movies, they thought, let's just kind of go up to The Graduate. Let's just go up to there. And so all you get, and that's why it's called Becoming Mike Nichols. So they just talk about the early career of Mike Nichols and just get up to The Graduate. And so rather than like talk about The Graduate for 3 minutes, they can talk about The Graduate for 20 minutes.
Oh,
and they can
great.
Talk about making Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf for 20 minutes. And they can talk about working with Elaine May and making Barefoot in the Park and, you know, all of that stuff. And so he really gets to go into details about these films. The stuff talking about making The Graduate is terrific. But the other thing is, Mike Nichols is hysterically funny and incredibly wry and intelligent. And so it is just a beautiful, like when it ends, it is that classic thing of like, I wish it wasn't ending now. I could keep watching this for five more hours. You
so
know
he's
what I mean?
Just, he's playing off the audience the whole time. A little.
Yeah, well, yeah, he is. Well, not even that. I mean, he's just telling his stories, and he's very good at telling his stories, but he's just unbelievably witty. He can't help but be witty. He is that guy. And he does actually play off the audience at times. Yes, they do occasionally ask questions from the audience, and his answers are just absolute pearlers. Like, you know, he's just incredibly intelligent. And then when you learn things like, I didn't realize that he was the son of immigrants and the language spoken at home wasn't English, so English is his second language, and we think Mike Nichols' English is not his first language.
Wow.
Stuff like that, yeah, is really, really impressive.
That's great. And that's what a good doc does, is it gets you an insight into something that you might not have known. And then
yeah.
a conversation in front of a live audience about like a certain period of somebody's work is got to be insanely intriguing in terms of you're just going to hear all the funny stories and the personal stuff and all that.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know whether he was ill or whether he just sort of got the sense that he was coming close to the end of his run, but he's very honest. You know what
right.
I mean? He's not talking like the kind of guy who's at all concerned with burning a single bridge. He's concerned. He's like talking like someone like who's the absolute most successful he can possibly be and is probably going to die soon, and he just lets it out.
And so this is, what's the name of it now? And it's on
that. That's called Becoming Mike Nichols, and that's on HBO Documentary Films.
Oh, great.
As is my other one, which is Everything is Copy, which is also about an incredibly witty writer. It's about Nora Ephron. And
oh, great.
About Nora Ephron's transition from journalist into screenwriter. And when you think that her first film was Heartburn, and she wrote, in like her first few movies were Heartburn and Silkwood and When Harry Met Sally, we're talking about someone who was born to write movies and just got there along the way through journalism. But she's such a natural screenwriter, one of the funniest screenwriters ever.
Well, that's...
And and how she became that person, including how she used her divorce from Carl Bernstein as the basis to write Heartburn.
Well, we're almost out of time, so say the titles of the two movies again.
Everything is Copy about Nora Ephron and Becoming Mike Nichols about Mike Nichols.
Thank you, CJ Johnson, for this spare min.
Thanks, man. I'll see you soon.
Take care.
All right. That was cool. CJ Johnson from the Movie Land podcast.
Very
always,
cool.
Always doing something cool. So
now we're going to do something new we haven't done. We're going to start doing this on the show now. We're going to talk about trailers, like when big trailers drop, because everyone talks about them.
Right.
We see them, but we don't talk about them enough on the podcast. So two of them dropped. Now, one of them dropped a couple weeks ago, but we haven't talked about it. The new Rogue One trailer. Now, this one, it's interesting the way it's being branded. It's very specific, like, this is not the actual Star Wars movie. This is a Star Wars story. It's a side story. It's got new characters. It's not part of the next trilogy. Like, it's very specific branding. This isn't it. You know, this isn't the second one. This isn't Lord of the Rings or Matrix where you get one a year. So,
and this is their first effort into, because these are going to become the norm.
There's going to be one every year. There's
yeah.
going to be, like, you know, the main trilogy, a side story. You know, they might do a Marvel thing where they say, well, maybe we'll release two in 1 year. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure that's being talked about in the bowels of Disney. In the So I'm such a fan. I'm still excited to see this movie. This is basically the story of how the Death Star plans were stolen and then given to the Alliance so they could blow up the original Death Star. And I just love what they've been doing with the technology now, where you see, like, walkers, you know, Imperial walkers on, like, a beach in a landscape, and, like, different ways that they're using all basically you could say the Star Wars elements, you know, everything from the characters to the vehicles to the special effects. And then, oh my God, I think it's Donnie Yen is in it, isn't he? As like some,
yeah, it's
as some samurai, but not a Jedi.
Donnie Yen's in it. Felicity Jones is in it. Mm-hmm. Like Forest Whitaker's in it.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. And it's directed by
Colin Trevorrow.
It's directed by Gareth Edwards.
Oh, Gareth Edwards. No, he's doing the other one.
Yeah.
Gareth Edwards.
So, I mean, you know, he did Monsters, which is a really cool
film. And Godzilla.
He did Godzilla. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if this is what... I mean, I dig this. I dig that this is going to... They're going to just show these kind of offshoots. Because, I mean, this is I want to say this is Disney's influence, because they've seen the success of what they've done with the Marvel Universe. That they're like, we need to do this with the Star Wars Universe. Because I want to see this...
That was discussed day one when the deal closed.
Yeah. They bought Lucas. That was why they made the deal.
Exactly.
We're going to pay $4 billion
and not release one movie, every 10 years. It's not going to happen.
I think it's cool. And I don't know.
The trailer made me excited. It also, like, it was a great trailer where it showed me, okay, I get what this is. And it's like just enough where now I'm interested.
Right.
Now, it didn't give me too much, but I like the little teases of the new characters and the new storylines, even though it's like, you know, technically it's kind of a prequel.
Right.
You know what happens when they steal the plans. But I'm excited. I want to see it.
All right.
And the other one is the Doctor Strange trailer. Now, Doctor Strange is a character in the Marvel Universe, not quite as popular as some of the other ones, but this is basically the magic character. You know, each, like, you know, DC has Dr. Fate, this is Dr. Strange. But what I love about Benedict Cumberbunny is that there's a backstory to Dr. Strange that's really interesting. He's a very prominent surgeon, and he's an asshole, and he's got a huge ego. But he's in an accident, he loses the use of his hand. So now his lifelong reason for being is now gone. So it's a journey of him actually rediscovering and finding himself. And I think that could be really interesting, especially when you add all of the mystical components, and then he eventually becomes, you know, a magic superhero. But but I think the character stuff is what's most interesting to me.
Well, yeah, in the trailer where you see Benny Cumbo all all Nick Nolte,
yeah,
crazy hair and beard, just just out of it, just gone out to lunch. Anytime you see that, you're like, oh, fuck.
Right.
Because it's always the... when it's a character you're sort of familiar with, like Doctor Strange, right. Like, so how did he go from that
right.
to then back up to the top of his whatever mountain that he's on?
Right, like, and then before he says, the Crimson Bands of Krytorak, or whatever, you know, one of his catchphrases that he has in the comic.
Yeah, and the description, after his career is destroyed, a brilliant but arrogant and conceited surgeon gets a new lease on life when a sorcerer takes him under her wing and trains him to defend the world against evil. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, let's go. And it's and you know, Benny Cumbo is Doc Strange. I'm in, man. Like, make it happen.
I think it's a good choice. I think he was a really good choice to cast as Doctor Strange. And there was an animated movie that came out a couple years ago that was okay, and it kind of went through like Doctor Strange's origin story, but I'm really excited to see this because this is kind of the first real foray into magic for like the Marvel Universe that we've seen. And this is what I love about it too, is we've seen, like, the science fiction. We've seen, like, the heist. We've seen kind of the family versions. We've seen the thrillers. We've seen
the
war movies, all these different types of Marvel superhero movies. And now we're getting into some interesting magic stuff. So I'm excited. I'm
ready to
see
it. I like the idea of Benny Cumbo. I'm wearing a little thin on, I guess it's a trope that to break up, to give a little lightheartedness. They fall on the... I think Joss Whedon kind of started it, who I think is great, but the heroes always do something like, who talks? You talk? Me talk? Like,
it's too cute.
It's too cute, and all the heroes are too, like, too comfortable with, like, ooh, don't punch me in the face. That might hurt. You know, that sort of, like, that's not it. Come on. All heroes are like this.
Right.
They're too irreverent and kind of like, I'm cool, I get it.
Snarky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want him to be like Miles Davis. Like, yeah, that guy's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
Like a real asshole.
Who has superpowers.
Yeah.
And loves letting you know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a hero.
Yeah.
He's not like me.
Yeah. He's not some regular Joe that just, we all have a hero inside us.
Let me get that for you. No.
No.
Fucking never.
Fuck you. Get the door. I don't open doors.
That's great. So Dave, we were talking before the show. You had seen Generation Iron. So tell us a little bit about that.
Before I go into that, too, your thing about Miles Davis and having the music, I saw the Organized Noise documentary as well, which I was really excited about, like Outkast, the Dungeon Family. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't use any of the music. It's so frustrating to watch it. They'll, like, dance into one of the beats a little bit, and you're like, oh, okay, here we-. And then they must not have gotten the rights to the music or something, because it is... Even when sometimes they're referencing, like, yes, we built this beat this way, and then they don't play it. It's really, really distracting. And really, that whole documentary comes off in a way as kind of being like the Organized Noise guys sort of asking for work.
Right.
Which is kind of a bummer. Otherwise, it's good. And they seem like the most likable guys and deserving of success. Right. And I hope they do get some work. But right. It's strange for the end of a documentary to be like, we didn't spend our money right the first time. So, hey, if you need some beats, call us. And then the other documentary I watched I can't imagine it's that appealing, because it's about bodybuilding, Generation Iron. And I think I have the same hesitation that everyone does. Like, well, I don't want to watch a bunch of dudes in Speedos
right.
who I would imagine have no personalities, who I don't care about.
Just dumb meat heads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then as I watch it, it's really well made. And I think it follows – it chronicles about eight guys. It's narrated by Mickey Rourke, who's kind of the perfect – you forget how grumbly right. and rugged his voice is. He really kind of fits like – his character in The Wrestler, that kind of like desperate, right. mm-hmm. I this is all I got. That's kind of fits all these guys. There's the Miles Davis hero, I'm kind of a dickhead and everyone right. hates him, but undeniably he's the best. And then there's everyone else. So there's this great kind of cast of, you find yourself going like, I don't know why, but I'm kind of rooting for that dude now.
Right.
There's a guy who paints, amazing artist, but he's also enormous. They're all huge.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't necessarily show... The softer side, or it gives a little bit of an introspective look into like what their psyche is like and mm-hmm. what the behind the scenes is like. And they kind of talk about how steroids are just sort of a part of it. They definitely don't shoot it down. They bring it up briefly, and you don't hear anyone go, I would never put that in my body. You hear guys going, you know, steroids have never been proven to kill anyone. Anything taken correctly can be beneficial. You know, and all those meathead guys, everyone says, I could take steroids, I could get as big as you. Try it. Just try. Like, they're very proud of the fact, like, you've got to also hit the gym and work out.
Right.
And so there are guys you hate. There are guys where you're like, oh, that's kind of sweet. Like, this one guy, I think he's Austrian or something like that. Like, his stepdaughter becomes like his best friend and is his biggest supporter and comes to watch. And to see these guys on stage, like, they essentially too, like the lighter skinned guys have to go and not only black face, like kind of like someone wipes them down with something that turns them very dark. So their muscles will pop out.
They get bronzed?
Beyond bronze. It's real dark. And so like, yeah, their whole skin, everything, like meaning whole skin, like their head, their face, they're leaning over and their like sort of spotter is wiping this stuff in between their butt cheeks and stuff like that.
Oh
like it's
God.
Very, the world is very sad when you see them like at a hotel and either them like preparing their 2 pounds of chicken that they have to eat and very regimented amounts of protein and carbs and sitting there kind of just quietly eating by themselves and going, this is the hardest part. Like, you've got to take care of everything you put in your body. And then they go pose and then you see them kind of losing like, well, my only option now to get into the Mr. Olympian is to win this one final contest. So the whole thing you think watching throughout is like, how do they afford this?
Right.
All these guys have the most, like, well, there's one guy that lives in kind of squalor. Everyone else has, like, beautiful homes. It's staggering.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I would recommend it. I think if you can get past, like, it's not just watching a bunch of dudes
flex
a bunch and stuff like that. And even
right.
that part doesn't even feel human. It's like watching a horse flex or something. They're so gigantic, they don't look like a normal human.
And it
human
brings
being.
You into that world.
Yeah, definitely. It gives you a different look where you're like, oh, I could kind of see myself like not becoming a fan and going to competition
right.
to competition, but like if I was in Vegas and someone was like, you want tickets to go to that? Like, I kind of do now. I want to see who's there watching it because it's full. It's like, it's at, I don't know if it's in the MGM, but I mean, it's like 10,000 seats full of people watching these dudes pose.
Sounds like MGM.
Yeah,
that's where, because that's where they put all the boxing and stuff.
Yeah,
oh, I thought that UFC's was bigger for some reason. Whatever,
well,
wherever it is.
Mandalay Bay has a bigger one,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. okay. So it's, I mean, giant, huge screens where they're, mm-hmm. it's like, I don't know. It's interesting to watch. And for me, it was something where, like, that's kind of why I watched it. I was scrolling through and like, well, that doesn't appeal to me at all. well, maybe I should watch that.
Let me give it a chance.
Yeah, I'm so unfamiliar with it.
Right.
So, yeah, and it's well made. I was expecting it was like a guy with huge fat muscle fingers that was like learning how to edit and had done it in like Movie Maker. I'm going to with a lot of like...
On an airplane.
And no, it was really well done. And mm-hmm. yeah, they do a great job of, not like King of Kong, which is such a great kind right. of villain and hero.
Right.
But this does have like a cast of characters where you find mm-hmm. yourself kind of going like, I like that guy. Like, I hope that guy does okay.
Cool.
All right. Generation Iron.
Generation Iron.
Boom.
We'll talk about DVD and Blu-ray
Let's
next.
Let's get into it.
The Revenant. If you missed this in the Ooh. Theater, check it out. Now this.
No, don't. Wait 20 years until it goes back in the theater.
I will say, this is the movie, if you can find it or a revival anywhere in the theater, see it on the big screen.
Absolutely.
This is an amazing movie on the big screen.
Have to watch it at home.
Right.
Lights
stand,
out.
And stand right next to the screen.
Like, yeah. But like but big. Lights out.
Yeah.
Shut your phone off.
Go buy, save the receipts, get a surround sound system.
Yeah.
Package it back up after. Take it back. Take it back.
But it's like, I mean, it's fan. You. It's visually, you. If you can't, you got to see it on the big screen. If you have to watch it at home, yeah. then literally, then give yourself the most cinematic experience
right,
you can
exactly.
have at home.
If the Duplasses and Linkletters are going to make... home, like, that's fine, make them straight to Netflix, but
yes.
someone's got to be making these big
spectacle,
and they don't
movies,
need to
yeah.
be Jurassic World where it's just a dinosaur chasing people
right.
with no story. Like, this movie brings you in, like,
it's
you
human
care, it's human, it's exciting,
it's,
that's what's going to be,
and
the future
it's
of the
innovative
year.
Camera work
and
yeah.
it made you feel cold.
Yeah, wear a blanket.
All you think yes. about is those poor PAs
yeah.
on the set.
Yeah.
Like, oh, god damn it.
Guy's getting $100 a day.
Yeah. He's freezing, losing his fingers.
Get down in the river there.
Yeah.
You got your waders on. Get, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And
shine that board back on Leo. We got to see the light bounce off him.
The next movie is a companion piece to The Revenant. This is Norma the North. It also has a bear in it. This is the animated polar bear movie that even kids were smart enough to avoid.
Yeah.
I saw nothing, no good tweets, no good reviews. Everyone was pretty angry. Like when you go, especially when you have kids, you go as a family, that's four tickets. When
yeah.
you see a shitty movie, you're four times as angry.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of money. So avoid that. The next one is 50 Shades of Black.
The black comedy about 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes. You know what's a funnier comedy? 50 Shades of Grey.
This is a hilarious yes. film. It is ridiculously hilarious.
So, and the next one is Ip Man 3. This is the third and last one.
It's I guess if you, I mean,
did you see the trailer?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
It's,
let me say
like
one thing about the trailer.
Ridiculous.
it's like, well, where are we going to go with the story from here? And somebody must have said, well, we could get Mike Tyson. Ip Man fights Mike Tyson. So you wonder when they were shooting the first one. He goes, you know, if this goes well, I think one day, maybe
one,
for the third one.
Which was like, this is so hilarious. The first one, which is like, let's talk about the actual guy that trained Bruce Lee and
yeah,
how he was
yeah.
like, where he, you know,
right.
tough times in China during World War II, a Japanese occupation and all mm-hmm. this stuff. And then the cut to...
Yeah.
Ip Man goes on spring break.
Yeah. and it's also they're promoting it as with an appearance by Mike Tyson. So he's probably in maybe two scenes, and you know, one of them he fights Ip Man and
Ip Man and
yeah.
Kiss and
yeah.
the Phantom of
yeah.
the Roller Coaster or whatever.
So
I did not see this movie.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. But
get the Revenant and get a receipt for your sound system
and
theater. Those are the things you should be spending your money on.
And watch yes. Ip Man, the first one.
Watch the first
yeah,
one.
Watch the first one.
And don't acknowledge this
yeah.
movie.
And now on Site Spotlight, weekly film news, you guys have to, Neil's been doing some amazing things with this article that you have to see some of the stuff he's mentioning. He's talking about, like, this is still in the planning stages. There is a Men in Black 21 Jump Street crossover movie that is coming out.
Of course there is.
And he is, now Neil's a big Godzilla fan, so Toho is making a new Godzilla movie. He embedded the trailer right in his article. He wanted to make sure
nice.
Everybody saw the new Godzilla trailer.
Last Godzilla one was just so ridiculous.
The American one?
The most...
The Bryan Cranston one.
Yeah, oh God.
I know.
I could go on. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. I just want to throw that out there with no verification.
So, yeah. And then, so check out Neil's things. And also, I want to mention my Kickstarter for Long Ago and Far Away, the graphic novel, is more than halfway there. First of all, I want to say thank you, guys. You guys have been really supportive. Definitely some big donors in there, for sure. And two out of the five Comedy Film Nerd spoiler tiers are gone.
Ooh.
There are only three left right now. So Ooh. We're going to be seeing two spoilers at least.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I don't know if one of you guys who bought one of those tiers said, because you sent an email saying, hey, could I put this off to 2017? And I'm thinking that's somebody, they have a movie in mind that are going to torture
us. Probably another Transformers.
Yeah, Transformers or Avatar, yeah. So there are three left. So there's only about 13 days left, and we've got about 11 grand to go, but we're more than halfway. Could not have gotten there without you guys, but if you haven't donated or pledged, please definitely do so. Hit one of the...
Let's read some of the...
Yeah, now I have to read these guys. Your comments are absolutely hilarious. So, Will Leonard, a long time ago in a cockwagon far, far away, a brave Chris Mancini once again waded into the deep waters of the Kickstarter pool to raise funds for a project.
Well, let's back up here. So, last episode we said, do a film quote.
Yes.
And then I also said, and say cockwagon.
Yeah. For so every comment.
So now they decided to then put cockwagon into a film quote.
Will our brave hero successfully achieve his goal of raising enough money, or will he be forced to commit seppuku with a mournful Graham acting as Kashikunin? Only time will tell.
Kashaku.
P.S. Poop, shit, fuck, damn, turd burglar.
Nice.
Hilarious, and also, Will, a little too close to home.
Yeah.
So. Jack Asbridge, did anyone else think of the rancor from Jabba's Place when watching the cockwagon scene in Idiocracy? Probably not. Fuck. Amy Elizabeth, I don't remember what backer number I was, but I feel compelled to share my favorite cursing stream from a film. Oh, fuck, wank, bugger, shit, arse, head, and hole with a cockwagon. Congrats, Chris, hoping for another Oscar rabble in 2017. Teresa Verite, this comment is in anticipation of the movie that will be made out of Long Ago and Far Away. If you're on the fence about donating, please do so, so that Chris can sell a whole cock wagon full of books, which can then be made into an equally awesome movie. I didn't think you were going to fit it in there, but man, you did.
Great. Way to bury the lead, yes. Teresa. That was nice.
And Joseph Hummel, oh, he must have done one of the spoiler cheers. He goes, fuck yeah, let's go see a movie. I promise it won't be Batman versus Superman. Oh. Probably.
Oh, you jackass.
And Sean Sakame, the Sakame brothers.
Sakame.
Well, I'm backer 170, halfway to 340, and I think I missed the fuck portion of the comments section. Oh, shit, I just typed fuck. Balls, I just typed shit and fuck twice. You see where this is going. See you fellas at Podfest 5. Emily Penrod, I'm sorry the fucking ass lookers and showbiz have been kicking you in the nuts. I hope this pledge feels like a sweet, sweet hand job on your cock wagon. But really, the only reason I pledge is because of the lovely accent you have. New Jersey. Pennsylvania, actually.
Yeah.
You can, when I, especially, I don't think I have it, but Graham reminds me every time I say water.
Yeah.
So.
Or when you make fun of my Chicago accent, yes. I'm always like, okay, Philly. Let's.
I liked it. Supportive, profane, and erotic. Oh, so it was a great comment.
Thank you, Emily.
Kurt E-H, I think I'm saying that right. One of you cockwagons called us out as cockwagons who listen to the show but never rarely contribute. Don't be a cockwagon. Pledge $5 to this project from the cockwagon film nerds. And then he commented again, comedy film nerds, lousy typo. And Diana Rojek Skinnard, I didn't want to curse, but my husband told me to jump on the cock bandwagon. And Gail Volp, love the comedy film nerds. I'm glad I could help. I hope this book isn't a bag of dicks delivered on a cock wagon. I can assure you it won't be, but it might be a couple of piles of haircuts. So.
nice Jackie Cation reference.
Chris Cash. One day a fucker shall rise from our ranks and use the power of the cock wagon to light our darkest fucking hour.
Oh, wow. Nice. I got a chill from that
one. Nice little Dark Knight.
Nice. Yeah. Good for you.
So those are the comments. Amazing. We will continue to read them. It's only 2 weeks left. Actually, no. After last week, next week will be the last one I'll be able to read comments on.
So more film quotes, and let's add fuck stick.
Done. Fuck stick.
Ha 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 ha.
people just turn to their keyboard.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuckstick. Write us some fuckstick comments. Those were great, you guys.
Hilarious. And thanks again for the support. Like I said, we're almost done, but you guys can get us to the finish line. We really appreciate it.
You're the best.
And just one last thing. If you are not thinking, like, if you're not really into graphic novels, think of it as a movie, because that's really what it is. It's beginning, middle, finish. Yeah, I think so.
If it works.
Thanks again. Okay, premiering this week. We're talking about casting a lot today, and I think this next one, we need to mention it again. This is Elvis and Nixon. This is a possibly based on a true story about Elvis wanting to be a secret agent for Nixon.
Google The King and Dick. My friend Scott Colonico made a short, and they released the transcripts of the letter he wrote, the audio files that he sent, and yeah, he really talk shit about the Beatles and how they're a bad influence, brought in drugs, and he's happy to go undercover, and he's traveling around the world so he can be very impactful in how drugs are a scourge. And then when he died, like, the amount of drugs in his system was just insane.
Well, that's that classic photo when they met that says Elvis, it says the president and the king. He got an award, he got like a award from the president of like a Say No to Drugs Award or whatever it was called that Nixon gave him, and he was high as a kite. He was on all of his, you know, his Percocets and whatever else that he was taking. But it's Michael Shannon as Elvis and Kevin Spacey's Richard Nixon.
Very interesting casting. I'm gonna get. I saw the trailer. I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. It looks weird, but I'm wondering if I could get used to it.
I mean, the reason I think that it's it could be really interesting is because those two guys are really great actors. And you could say, well, Michael Shannon doesn't look as good as Elvis does, but late years, crazy Percocet Elvis thinking he's going to fight crime with the president. Like that's a Michael Shannon and mutton chops, you know?
Yeah, I'll buy it.
I think it could
bring in his own guns into the White House. Like I can provide my own firearms.
I mean, he's out of his fucking gourd. So I don't know. I think it's interesting to see. And I think it's, director Lisa Johnson does it, so I don't know. I'm curious to see.
Now, the next one is The Huntsman, Winter's War. I just, if you want to see an effects reel, just go to this movie. It's literally, it's, you know, one...
And the girls are good actresses who are attractive. Like, I think I think this movie is quite, like, I don't, it's cool to see. Like, normally you'd see The Expendables and all these dudes, and here's this story that's like... five leading ladies that are all cool, doing cool special effects stuff.
It's interesting to see how much it's trying to tap into. It's like fairy tales.
Right.
Snow White, giant CG movies, Frozen. Like, what else can we try to trick people into going to see this movie with?
Did you see the first one?
I did not see the first one, The Huntsman. But I don't think you'll be lost if you see this one.
Maybe. I'm going to wait till they're done with all of them.
Yeah, and get the box set. The next one is Holidays. This is actually a horror anthology series with Kevin Smith and a couple of other horror directors who do little short films about each holiday.
Sounds cool. That could be cool.
Hologram for the King. This is the new Tom Hanks movie where he's, you know, the failed businessman. He goes trying to sell, like, something, obviously a hologram.
I actually saw the trailer for it last night. So, boy, it's hard to say because... So the premise is he's got... 3D video conferencing that he's trying to like get the Shah of some country or something to finance, and he gets there and it's just a desert, and there's a scene where in the trailer where the guy's like, we're gonna put a shopping mall here, and he's just looking at sand and all this, and he's like, oh Jesus. And then it looks like it's kind of a love story, but the trailer, they had a guy doing a voiceover like, when businessman Dan, and that was like,
even his like 80s movies didn't have that.
That weird narration. No. Yeah. So
I was sitting there like, I was waiting for the joke because it felt like, we're doing a parody
of old
bad trailers. Yeah. And I was like, oh man. So it's that really made me go, God, I don't know. I love Tom Hanks.
And it is still April.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Feels like that one movie where he has had the scooter and Julia Roberts. teacher, you know what I mean?
I just watched Captain Phillips, and because I'd soured on Tom Hanks at all, but like Charlie Wilson's War, and then it seemed like there were just some that didn't really, weren't that impactful, or didn't appeal to me, like the scooter one and stuff.
Right.
But he still got it, and the guy's still
amazing.
Such a leading guy.
Even in a movie you don't like him in, you still like watching him.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's I think that was this. Was that Larry? Yeah, it was Larry Crown was the one that you're just like. I felt like
a man that rides a scooter,
trying to find a new leash on life until a teacher walked in. Like so
that could have used a voiceover.
That was the first thing I flashed when I was watching this trailer last night for the Hologram for the King. I was like, did Community College got him this gig to work? Like, just I'm worried about this movie.
Now, there's one more movie I want to mention, and this movie, because I want to reference back to what we were talking about with trailers. This trailer, Tale of Tales,
here.
No,
got five spaces after Miles Ahead.
I wanted to create a dramatic effect for the second page. So this is called Tale of Tales, and it's a really fucked up trailer. And the other thing, too, it's interesting, I couldn't find a rating on this movie. Because it's also an anthology story. It's like three different fairy tales, but very dark and like kind of adultish. But I'm not sure if it's like teenager adult or like Blue NC Velvet 17. Adult. Yeah, or like Blue Velvet adult, you know? Like that kind of like, because it's not quite clear on the trailer. But it also makes me see, like, there's like a giant flea, there's like a dragon, and like these weird twins, and like all this. Like, it's like weird fantasy, horror, romance, like everything kind of together. It's got Salma Hayek in it, I think John C. Reilly is in it, too.
It's Mateo Garrone who directed it. He also did Gamora and Reality and...
So it looks crazy. So I definitely am interested in seeing this movie. If you can find it, it's very limited release. Check out the trailer, and then if you can find the film, check it out. Because it may not be playing near us, so you can let us know how it is. All right.
Episode 316, guys. Lock it down.
It's in the books.
Put it in the books.
We really did it.
David David Huntsberger, well. Where can people see you do your Don Knotts one-man show?
I'll be taking my traveling Don Knotts.
At the Limpet Theater?
Limpet Theater. Now, is it Don Knotts baseball instructional? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's called Knuckleball, the Don Knotts story. And it just follows his life and a little tale of the Mr. Limpet. And he kind of regretted that. I don't know if you knew that.
A single A baseball coach.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I will be where at Cobb's in San Francisco. All night. The Junk Show, if you live in Los Angeles, come out to that. It's monthly. Variety.
I've done that. It's a fun
You've
show.
Done it. Character. Graham did a character. Come back and do stand-up. Come do. So if you have shorts, show shorts and animation and there's magic. It's a variety of things. People telling stories.
That sounds great. I'll bring a short film.
Do it. Do it. It's a place for people to not only showcase stuff, but get some live audience reaction. And then it's real fun. And that's the second Sunday of every month at the Copper Still. And then I'll be at Cobb's in San Francisco, May 27th through 29th with Al Madrigal.
Nice.
And I'll be at Bridgetown in Portland, June 1st through 3rd.
Nice.
Great.
Cool. I am working in Vegas this week at Improv at Harrah's, April 19th to the 24th. I'm doing a National Association of Broadcasters panel on Wednesday the 20th. So if you're at NAB this week, I'll be there. It's through Digital LA. It's like I'm sure it's about podcasting. But it's and then we're doing Pop Divas Monday, May 9th at the Lab at the Improv. That's episode 2 with Joe Wagner and I. That's a 6 o'clock show. That's their happy hour thing. It's free. And then Portland, Oregon, I'm headlining May 12th, one night only, at the Helium Comedy Club. So check that out. It's the first time I've headlined there in several years. So go to Helium Comedy Club. And then Irvine, California, I'm headlining one night at the Irvine Improv May 22nd. So check that out. Those are my dates. And then I'm also in Chicago at the Zanies in St. Charles, the 6th and 7th of May. So check those dates out.
Very cool. I've been still doing my podcast Blitz. I was on a Crab Feast that just dropped today as well. I'll be doing Geekscape, Will Anderson's podcast, and a couple other ones that still haven't dropped yet, like Kira Sultanovich just hasn't dropped yet. But some really really fun discussions. We talk about, on Crab Feast, to talk about how I had a little ghost encounter on my honeymoon in England. It was really, because, you know, they nice. They prompt you for stories. I'm like, oh, yeah, I do have a ghost story. So it was a really fun discussion. And of course, check out the Kickstarter. Its time is running out. Tick, tick, tick. And I very much appreciate the support.
One last thing, if I can.
Sure.
At DavidHunsberger.com. There are other stand-up dates later on in the summer. And I have a – we were talking about animation – I have an animated stand-up special that you can stream there through Vimeo. And there's also a DVD that has two versions, stand-up and animation, and then just an animated version.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
Nice. Yeah. All right, guys. All my tour dates at grahamell.com. You can also sign up for my newsletter. And, of course, go to comedyfilmnerds.com, iTunes, the whole shot. Like us. Follow us.
Yes.
Always helps. And LA Podfest, September 23rd through the 25th. Oh, that's it. Thank you, David.
Thanks, fellas.
My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Hunt Shot First.